A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 504. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about The Lost World. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we are looking at a BBC adaptation of Arthur Conan Doyle's novel of the same name. It was originally broadcast as two 75-minute episodes in 2001 on the BBC, although we'll talk about this later on. It was then sort of stitched together into a 2.5-hour movie, and it is an adaptation of a classic novel. We've got a great cast to talk about, and spoilers, I'm going to give it away slightly, Brian, we have got dinosaurs again. Quite exciting times.
Yes, indeed. So the setup gives us Professor Challenger, who has returned to London after a perilous mission to South America, and he believes that there is unknown life and life thought to be extinct in previously unexplored areas of the world in remote places. And Challenger tries to convince his peers and other scientists to fund an expedition to go to some of these places.
And with funding from a newspaper company, from a rich adventurer, and from, strangely enough, a skeptical rival of Professor Challenger's, he manages to bring together enough funds to launch his expedition to head back and to discover his lost world of the title. The scene is set for a rip-roaring adventure.
It certainly is.
So our characters, obviously we've mentioned the lead character, Professor Challenger, played by none other than Bob Hoskins. Challenger is a somewhat eccentric and grouchy paleontologist. He is renowned for his strange theories and for his fairly terrible manners and forthright opinions. I have to say, I think that's even worse in the book than it is in Bob Hoskins' version. I don't think Bob Hoskins was picking up characters and moving them around and shaking them as he is in the book. But there he is. He's a rather grouchy, grumpy paleontologist at the center of this.
Yes, there is a sense in this version of him being really a decent person, but yeah, has a somewhat uncouth manner and is driving a lot of this. Professor Summerlee, played by James Fox, is Challenger's rival at the Natural History Museum in London and tends to be dismissive of Challenger's ideas, but he agrees to join Challenger on this expedition. And he is sort of grumpy and uncomfortable and doesn't want to be in these remote places and without the comforts of home, as compared to Challenger, who tends to sort of revel in being in that kind of place and scenario.
Yes, indeed. An interesting character, the skeptic on the expedition. Then we have young Edward Malone, played by the actor Matthew Rhys. Malone is a young journalist with the Daily Gazette newspaper. He is absolutely fascinated by Challenger's theories, and he persuades his boss at the newspaper to partly fund the expedition and to send him along as the reporter with the expedition, with the exclusive story to come back to the Daily Gazette. As we'll learn in a moment, Brian, he's also got another reason that he wants to go on an adventure, but we'll get to that.
Yes, indeed. Lord John Roxton, played by Tom Ward, is a noted adventurer and explorer, the dashing, charming, and rich character who is involved more for the adventure than the science, and is a big part of getting the adventure funded.
And then, of course, when they get to the Amazon, they're going to meet the Reverend Theo Kerr, a Christian missionary with his own mission on the river of the Amazon. He will act as a sort of go-between the expedition and the local people, but he also has quite strong views about how the mission, or rather the expedition, should proceed. And the Reverend Theo Kerr is played by none other than Peter Falk, Columbo himself. Absolutely astonishing to see him here in this BBC production, but really nice to see him, Brian.
Yes. Rather different than his performance as Columbo, for sure. But yeah, an interesting part of it, he can be antagonistic to some of the other characters in some parts of this, which is interesting. Agnes Clooney, played by Elaine Cassidy, is the Reverend's niece, and she is an orphan and a very capable and modern woman who joins the expedition in some respects as a guide because she lives closer to where they're going and understands more of the place and the local language. And so on. And of course, she is a potential romantic interest for both Lord Roxton and Edward Malone.
Yeah, so Agnes is quite, as you say, Brian, she's quite a capable modern woman who wears trousers. And I think there's some interesting stuff about the time period that this is set in, which we'll perhaps get to in our next episode. But yeah, she's interesting.
Yeah, I think so. So continuing a little further on with things, Professor Challenger has a fragment of a map, which he believes shows this remote Brazilian plateau, his lost world, and how to get to it. So the expedition is equipped and sets out for South America and for this area of the Amazon.
And as we've suggested, some of the members of the expedition have their own reasons for being there. Lord Roxton, it seems, is just after another one of his famous adventures that certainly the newspapers are always very interested in. Professor Summerlee, I think he's just there. He thinks it's all stuff and nonsense, I think, Brian, and he's just trying to disprove Challenger's theories, I think.
Yes. He's going in order to prove Challenger wrong. I think that's right.
And then, of course, we've got the young journalist, Edward Malone, who, as we say, is very keen on Professor Challenger's ideas and the expedition. But he also may have volunteered partly in an effort to impress his society fiancée back in London, a young lady who sort of, I don't know, she seems to want him to do better. And he sees this expedition and adventure as partly a way of doing that.
Yes, there is sort of a slightly odd thing being set up with the woman at home and then the woman on the adventure with them. So the group of them together on this expedition will face all sorts of mishaps and things going wrong as they eventually get to this plateau. And they have this gap over a gorge, this thing they have to bridge to cross over to it, which is shown as this very perilous type of thing with each one of them crossing. And then, of course, we get there and there are dinosaurs.
Hooray! And more of those next time.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's go to our production notes. We start with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the novelist who lived from 1859 to 1930, one of the most famous British novelists of his time, and still, nearly 100 years after his death, incredibly popular. There are still, obviously, so many adaptations of his most famous creation, Sherlock Holmes, constantly on screen in TV or film versions of Sherlock Holmes. And of course, I looked back at our various episodes. We have covered Sherlock Holmes in the cartoon series Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd Century back in British Invaders 248 and 249. A slightly unusual version, perhaps, of his most famous fictional detective.
That's right. And I think we found that the most portrayed characters on on, it was either on film or on film and television. It was Dracula and Sherlock Holmes were the two in contention for the title there. So yeah, one of the most portrayed characters out there.
Yeah.
And Doyle was friends with a lot of notable figures in the late 19th century and early 20th century. And notable in this case was his friendship with the explorer Percy Harrison Fawcett. And in February 1911, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle attended Fawcett's lecture at the Royal Geographical Society and was struck by these recent adventures on the border of Brazil and Bolivia.
And in particular, Fawcett mentioned an area of impenetrable forests on the Hunchaca Plateau and his sightings of monstrous tracks in the earth of unknown origin. He could not identify the creatures that had created these monstrous tracks. And of course, I guess if you're at that lecture, you're a Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, you're going to be fascinated with this. And so he asks Fawcett for further details and gets maps and photographs and obviously starts to craft the novel that will become The Lost World. And I'm fascinated by this, Brian, because he partly based his journalist character, Edward Malone, on the journalist and notable human rights campaigner E.D. Morrell. And Lord Roxton was partly inspired by the diplomat Sir Roger Casement, two absolutely fascinating figures from the early 20th century.
Indeed. And Morrell and Casement were known at the time for drawing the world's attention to the horrors inflicted on the Congo by King Leopold of Belgium. So we had these people who, you know, had a significant role in things that way. And then in 1911, Roger Casement was starting to report human rights abuses in the Peruvian part of the Amazon. So, yeah, there was some big stuff going on at that point with some of these people that Arthur Conan Doyle was looking to.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. Morrell and Casement, I recommend the Rest is History podcast, their series on the Congo and the Heart of Darkness, to learn more about those. And I've just read a fascinating book about them as well, but that's probably too much of a tangent for us here. We have to get to The Lost World and the novel.
Indeed. So Doyle published the novel, The Lost World, in 1912, and went on to write two more Professor Challenger novels.
Those were The Poison Belt in 1913, The Land of Mist in 1926, and the short stories When the World Screamed in 1928 and The Disintegration Machine in 1929. Challenger as a character was quite interesting and popular with the public, and I think Conan Doyle found him interesting to write about as well.
Yes, but I think it was the Lost World was the Challenger story that really caught on and caught the imagination of the public.
Indeed, and of course became a popular subject for adaptations. So the first film version of The Lost World was a silent movie in 1925. I don't know if that still survives. There was the Irwin Allen version in 1960, which I do remember seeing when I was young. But it's been quite popular since then as well, Brian.
Absolutely. There have been three direct-to-video productions and three television productions aside from the one that we're talking about. So this has been adapted and sort of looked to lots of times over the years. This particular version starts its behind-the-scenes story with the success of the BBC show Walking with Dinosaurs, created by Luke Haynes. And that had something of a runaway success. It had an American release with a different narrator that was highly promoted and also very successful. And we talked about how Haynes wanted to use their experience creating these on-screen dinosaurs to make adventure shows rather than documentary-style shows, as Walking with Dinosaurs was.
Yes, and of course, the reason we talked about that is because Luke Haynes went on to create Primeval, which we did as recently as episodes 493 and 494. And of course, Luke Haynes is a co-producer on this show. To be honest, we discovered The Lost World through talking about Primeval, and his Primeval writer Adrian Hodges co-wrote the screenplay for this with Tony Mulholland, and it was all directed by Stuart Orme, who we have previously covered because he did that David Jason show Ghost Boat, episodes 246 and 247. So there's some characters involved which create links to other British Invaders shows we've covered.
Yes, and Ghost Boat was very well directed, so that's an interesting person to have involved there for sure. They had two notable casting coups with Bob Hoskins and Peter Falk, both very big names to get involved, and it seems the involvement of Peter Falk helped them secure some co-funding from French television due to the popularity of Columbo in continental Europe that was still very big even at that point.
Yeah, he's a huge deal in Europe, Columbo. I can't remember where the statue of Columbo is. It may be in Romania, I believe.
Indeed. For the Amazon, the production went to New Zealand, which was just becoming a popular location for filming and a holiday destination as well. This was around the time that Peter Jackson's productions of The Lord of the Rings were really getting going. The release of Fellowship of the Ring into theaters was only a few months earlier in 2001 compared to the release of this show.
I'm interested how different parts of the world become popular filming destinations. On shows that we've covered in the past, I noticed that in the sort of like later 2000s and 2010s, Cape Town in South Africa became a go-to place. But at the time, as you say, Brian, New Zealand was becoming the place to go and film your wild adventures.
Yes, absolutely. And those beautiful naturescapes they have there became sort of very popular to use. They had a variety of local animals combined with some shots that they filmed in zoos. And of course, animatronic and quasi puppet type creatures and CGI, you know, computer graphic creatures added in post-production.
Yes, particularly dinosaurs, you've got that combination of sort of like models for close-ups and then the CGI is added later on. And as you say, there's some real animals in there as well. There's all sorts of little tricks they did with swimming snakes and so on that were done practically. Yeah, a combination of techniques used.
Yes, using that combination was something that they really developed quite a lot for Walking with Dinosaurs.
Now, if you've seen this show, you'll know that it perhaps, perhaps remember it starts with an opening sequence of Professor Challenger escaping from his previous expedition in a perilous dugout canoe voyage down a raging river. This was filmed on a river in New Zealand, which was part of a hydroelectric scheme, which meant the water could be turned off so they could set up various shots and get their cameras in position and so on. But they still needed some rather remarkable and extremely dangerous stunt work, which I gather was carried out, according to the commentary track, by a couple of local New Zealand Olympic level kayakers who could flip the fiberglass supposed to be log canoes and then survive the rapids. It does look more than dangerous, I think, Brian.
Yes, they did get some pretty dramatic stuff in there.
And they've also got Bob Hoskins swimming ashore in the very cold water to show Professor Challenger surviving this adventure on his first expedition. So they even got Bob in there as well.
That's right. It's quite something for sure. There is quite a bit of stunt work involved in here with performers in ape man outfits and this sort of thing. The special special effects were supervised by Paul Verrill with the VFX company Framestore, who of course had worked on Walking with Dinosaurs and would go on to do Primeval as well.
And just one other feature of the production we'll mention, which is that it has original music composed for the series by Rob Lane, and it is quite, you know, wonderful, suitable, the exciting music, quite a good score, not quite perhaps up to John Williams and Jurassic Park, but getting there.
Yeah, good stuff. It's quite effective for sure. The Lost World was broadcast on BBC One on December 25th and 26th of 2001.
Right. If we've tickled your fancies and you think you might want to watch this show, let's go to availability. In Region 2, it was released both on VHS and DVD in 2002 as the single 145-minute film. So they've lost 5 minutes, I think, which is basically just the title sequence and the previously on for the second episode. It includes the commentary track from director Stuart Orme and producer Christopher Hall, which I've been listening to and is quite helpful. There's also a 30-minute Inside the Lost World making-of feature showing them balancing on thin ropes over not so quite deep gorges as is shown in the film, but you get to see how they do some of this stuff. That DVD is still available. It's quite pricey at £30. I've got the impression that it's basically stock is low and that when it's gone, it's probably gone. And also, it doesn't appear to be streaming or available to rent on Cinema Paradiso. So you're only left here in Region 2 with that £30 DVD. And I'm going to suggest that if you want to watch it, you probably need to get it before it disappears. What about in Region 1, Brian?
In Region 1, there is a DVD release that I saw selling for about $24 US. And it is also available on Amazon Prime. So it's included with a Prime membership if you're in the US. And it looks like it's also available for non-Prime members for free with ads in it. Again, if you're in the US. If you're in Canada, I believe you're looking at getting a DVD from either the US or UK.
Strange, and I don't understand the reason why it is streaming in the US but not elsewhere, particularly not here in the UK, but there you go.
Yeah, the ways of rights and contracts for these things can be very complicated indeed.
Yeah. What isn't complicated, of course, is that the novel, The Lost World, is, of course, widely available in the public domain. You can find it for free or in very cheap digital copies in the Amazon marketplaces. I remember reading it when I was a kid, Brian, and being thrilled by Dinosaur Adventures, of course. I remember that Professor Challenger is quite a fearsome character in the book. They have softened him slightly with Bob Hoskins.
Yes, definitely an update for a protagonist there.
So that'll do us for the first part. Next time, we're going to get to some of those dinosaurs. We're going to get to some of the adventures on the plateau of the Lost World. We've mentioned ape creatures. So there's some more to talk about next time, Brian.
Absolutely. And we will talk a bit about our fascination with dinosaurs and how they keep coming up and the idea of humans interacting with them as we have in so many pieces of fiction.
Yes, indeed. And of course, we'll give you our reviews and recommendations for this DVD or streaming show.
Absolutely. So until then, you can find all of our previous episodes at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on some of the conversations. Or you can follow us on Threads and on Instagram. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, please find us and follow us on Facebook. And also find us and follow us at the Voice of Geeks Network, which you'll find at vognetwork.com. Come and join British Invaders, some other podcasts, some Twitch content, lots of gaming at the Voice of Geeks, vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Thank you very much. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.